Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features Biofuel Watch on the problems with biofuels. Andy Carey with an update on the armed takeover of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. And we'll hear an excerpt from a documentary by Naomi Klein based on her book, This Changes Everything. At 11 o'clock, the Radio Zine will feature a special town hall meeting that was held to deal with issues related to the Porter Ranch methane gas leak. And we thank all of you KBOO members for supporting the station and making it possible. If that doesn't include you, change that today, won't you? Go to our website and click Donate Today. We'll be back next week.
It's 9 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, as Ani mentioned, is Veterans Voice. Angie and Marvin interview five female war veterans who are part of the play Breaking Rank. Stay tuned for that. We have a few announcements to listen to. It's 9 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Foundation is seeking to fill two vacancies on the board of directors. The board will elect the new directors at the February board meeting. Are you interested in nonprofit governance and in helping to shape the future of your community radio station? Do you have 10 to 15 hours per month to support KBOO? Then this may be just the right opportunity for you. The application and instructions are posted on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and paper copies are available at the station. In order to be eligible to fill one of these two vacant seats on the KBOO Board of Directors, you must be a KBOO member and you must submit a complete application by either emailing the document at kboocommunity@gmail.com, or by mailing or dropping off the completed documents to the station to the attention of Timothy Welp, KBOO Community Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please send in your application by 5 p.m., February 15, 2016. If you have any questions, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com. Thank you for your support of community radio.
My landlord, a wealthy man, a living offering like the fat of the land.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Eviction Free 2016, a rally in March organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at 4:30 p.m., tenants will gather at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination against racial minorities. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, neighbors, if you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors, you know you should fight for a right for the common good.
say to America is be true to what you said.
Okay, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, 104.3 FM, Corvallis and the Willamette Valley, 91.9 FM, Hood River and the Columbia Gorge. You can hear KBOO on the World Wide Web at KBOO 90.7, at KBOO.FM. And you can hear our earlier shows if you want by going to KBOO.FM/Veterans Voice. I'm Marvin here with Angie.
Good morning.
And we've got some wonderful guests we're going to get to in just a minute. And we got just a couple of things we wanted to say. And I just want to tell everybody about Nick Turse's new book. It's called Tomorrow's Battlefield, U.S. Proxy Wars and Secret Ops in Africa. And that's Nick Turse's new book that is really, really good that I hope you, everybody. And then you wanted to talk about, okay. Today we're going to be talking with folks.
Well, there's actually a rally today. It is at Pioneer Courthouse Square at 4:30. And it is a U.S. out of Iraq rally, 25 years of killing in Iraq, and it is happening at Pioneer Courthouse Square at 4:30, sponsored by Peace and Justice Works. So please be there if you can.
In fact, this is our 25th year on a Veterans Voice on KBOO. 25 years we've been doing this, and we want to thank all KBOO listeners because you're the ones that keep us on the air. And we're going to be speaking this morning with a wonderful group. Breaking Rank is the play, and I'm going to let Angie go ahead and introduce everybody and talk about it.
Thank you for being here, everybody.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I think that the best thing to do, because there are five people, is maybe we can go around and say into the microphone your name and how you're affiliated with this. And then maybe we can progressively talk about this really interesting This is going to be a really powerful play. I'm really glad we're able to be here. So can we start with you? Maybe say your name and how you're affiliated?
Sure. My name is Lynn Joy Nesbitt. I'm director of Wise Counsel and Comfort, which is a co-op of about 120 young people. Well, mostly young, not me, mental health professionals who offer affordable counseling and therapy in the Portland area. Mm. And we are a co-sponsoring organization of this project, Breaking Rank.
Great. And then...
Hi, I'm Belle Landau. I'm the executive director at the Returning Veterans Project. We ask licensed, independent healthcare practitioners, counselors, acupuncturists, chiropractors, folks like that, to open a pro bono slot in their practice for post 9/11 war zone veterans and their families, active duty service members. We serve a lot of Guard and reservists because of Oregon having a lot of deployed Guard and reserves.
Yeah, and Belle's been on our show twice.
While ago, though. It's time, don't you think?
Yeah, it's been a while, but Belle's been on with us twice.
I'm Jessica Dart, and I am facilitating and directing the project through Well Arts. So I worked with the veterans for 10 weeks in a writing workshop to get their writing ready for the stage, and we just began rehearsals.
My name is Cecily Overman, and I get the pleasure of being being one of the actors in the piece.
And my name's Lena Lewis. I am a woman veteran. I am one of the writers in the play.
Wow, that's great. And we wanted to ask you about your going into service in the first place.
Sure.
Tell us about that.
Okay. I was born and raised in Portland, went to Wilson High School, never had any intention of joining the military. As I always knew what I wanted to do, I wanted to be an artist and go to art school, and I worked very diligently towards that. When I wasn't able to go to art school because honestly, my parents made too much money for me to get financial aid, and they were not able to foot the bill. I came up with the idea that I could you know, pay my own way with the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. And I was quite apprehensive about joining the military, but I was able to get a guarantee that I would be doing graphic design and illustration, and that would be my job. And so, you know, I was quite, you know, I of course, at 19, you know, there's only so much preparation, but I did a little bit of research, although the recruiters were very dishonest.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I said, well, I won't ever have to shoot a gun. You know, I'm not into that. Oh, no, you won't. You know, so I had a few surprises, and I was definitely never told anything about the culture, or especially as a woman.
Mm-hmm. So were you in the Army?
I was in the Army.
You went to both Iraq and Afghanistan?
I actually was in during peacetime. I got mm-hmm. out in 1990. My permanent party was Wiesbaden Air Base.
Oh, wow.
In Germany. Mm-hmm. And so I was, people were being deployed mm-hmm. When I got out.
Gosh, that's really, wow. 2-3 years, 4 years? How long were you in for?
It was a total of 3 years.
3 years, okay. Great. Now, who came up with this? Anybody can answer this one for me. Who came up with breaking rank, and what does it mean?
Well, as far as the title goes, that was a title that we came up with. Lynn Joy and the writers and I, as a group, we were having one of our workshop sessions one night, and the play had been called something else previously, and we thought, you know what, that title isn't really doing justice to the piece that we've created. And so what can we evoke with the title that really lets people know what this play is about right away? And these are all stories about women veterans who have not gone the typical route and who have rebelled to a certain extent. And so we really thought that Breaking Rank was a good title to sum that up.
That's a really good title, I think.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think that any woman is you know, kind of resisting, whether they admit to it or not, just by being a woman in the military is mm-hmm. in a position of resistance.
Mm-hmm. For sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. And the writers, can somebody talk about the writers? Who wrote these?
Well, Lana's a writer.
Yeah, Lena. Yes. Lena's one of our
You're
writers.
One of the writers?
Yes.
Who else was the writer?
Lena's the only writer that we have in the room, but there are five writers total.
Yeah, there's four other women. And so we went through this amazing process over a 10-week workshop, and where none of us knew each other. And so we all kind of, you know, we're sitting in a room looking at each other, but we eventually got comfortable, and we really started joining in supporting each other mm-hmm. through this very vulnerable process.
Yeah, very vulnerable, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, this is Angie. I wanted to ask, how did this idea even happen? How did this idea even start?
Yeah.
Can we talk about the formation, the early formation of this project, and how it morphed into the workshop actually existing?
Yeah, this is Belle from Returning Veterans Project. I had been thinking, and my staff and I had been talking about doing something specifically for women veterans. We were looking at issues that they face that are somewhat different from men that return from war, and military sexual trauma being one of the big ones. And yeah. So Lynn and I talked about it as well. Lynn has been, Wise Counsel's really generous in donating space to practitioners of ours who don't have their own space. So we were talking about the issue, and I had gone through Well Arts as a writer in my 40s when I had cancer, and I knew how healing it was for me, and I wanted to give women veterans that opportunity. So we started out, right, trying to find people who could tell their stories of MST, and nobody came forward.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I think one person maybe came forward. And
how'd you get the word out? How did you...
Up at the VA, on social media, the vet center, you know, several different ways. And I think it, we tried to do it specifically for Iraq and Afghanistan women veterans, and I think it was just too soon. So we worked with Well Arts to kind of change it just to women veterans. And actually, unlike the Returning Veterans Project, it's women from a variety of eras who are the writers, which I think turned out to be a really great idea.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I really think it was good. Yeah. And so you work in mental health, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that must have been really, really interesting to be there when these women are really starting to get into some really personal things.
Exactly, yeah. It was a remarkable experience and one that we hope to do again. The fact that the women are from different eras, different races, different political, you know, positions, different spiritual places in belief and politics and everything, and the blending and melding of the women was really, really wonderful. I was Wise Counsel and Comfort. We didn't play a big role in this project except for the marketing and space and so forth. The women met at one of our offices. Mm-hmm. And I, as a former counselor, just spent time in the room with them, just to be a support if needed, and it was such a privilege.
Yeah, I think it was really important to have somebody there that for... 'cause I've gone for years to PTSD counseling, and it's always good to have somebody there when you start flying off the walls.
There
it's
you
good
go.
To have somebody there. Mm-hmm. You mentioned something that's really interesting, and you said different classes of people, different nationalities.
Yeah, I mean, it's a colorful room, and
we're all from the U.S., so we all have the same nationality.
Yeah, right.
So did you have African-American women?
That lady sitting across the room from me.
Yes, I am African-American, Native American, and German.
Uh-huh.
So true representation of America.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And age? What ages?
From late 30s to late 60s.
Really? Vietnam? Vietnam vets?
Nobody who is a Vietnam vet. Our oldest participant was active around 69, 70 and into the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
I really wanted to ask the actress some questions. Cecily, I'm really curious because you're not a veteran, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And so, how did you actually? I'm really curious from your standpoint how this was for you as far as reading the material, learning to piece together this material and present it in a way that actually represents the true writings that are happening. How did you actually get hooked up with this whole process? Do you already work with Well Arts, or
I have done some projects with Well Arts, and I've really enjoyed my time and being able to partner with the writers and be able to bring their words to life and have the process. I've just, for myself and for the writers and for everyone watching, I've noticed just such a healing and empowering experience that I love to be a part of. Mm-hmm. So when I heard that this was happening, I said, please count me in. I would love to audition. I would love to be involved, and went through that process. And luckily, we were only in our first week of rehearsal. Mm-hmm. So I'm still very much in that exploratory space. And it has been so helpful to be able to have the writers in the room with us, which is really unusual as an actor, to be able to be able to speak to the author of the words you're going to be speaking. So that has been incredibly edifying, especially in this last week, being able to sit next to your writer and be like, okay, so these acronyms, the something, 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 something. Okay, so what is this? You know, like even just being able to get an idea from all the writers about the culture, about the military culture and what it was like to be a woman in that culture back in 1970 and just even in 2008 and how that's changed and how some of it has been the same. And so for me, not only my own personal research, but having the writers there as a resource has been incredible. And I'm excited about continuing to explore over the next five weeks. Left. Yes.
So when you're actually going and acting, performing this, when the performance actually happens, are you performing or are you acting out a specific writer? Are is an actor assigned to a specific writer, or are you acting out the writings of several different veteran women?
That's,
how does that work?
Yeah. With each project, it's a little different. With this one, there is, for each actor, there is a writer that we are primarily representing. But because each writer's story has other people, has dialogue, I get to essentially be in a few different writer's stories as different characters, as different people in their life. But yes, there is the way that it works is there is a one writer that I am primarily representing. So I follow her story through the show.
What have you felt and learned about the military experience from doing this? I know that that's a pretty hefty question, but
yeah.
What are some of the things that stand out to you as far as, wow, I didn't know this, or wow, this must have been this?
I think overall the resiliency and the flexibility that that these women had to have, and the ability to be, oh my goodness, have the integrity within themselves to be able to be able to survive in this kind of world. I'm trying to think of the strength is the biggest thing that I can think of, but I would love to think if there was like some sort of story or some sort of nugget that is not quite coming to me. But maybe Jessica's had also a lot of time with the...
And I mean, I also am not a veteran. And so this was my first experience really working very closely with women who have served in the military. And I have learned so much just about discriminatory treatment. And some of the writers have survived MST. And hearing them write about those experiences.
And by MST, we're talking about...
military sexual trauma. And so just having these women be brave enough to share their experiences and to be able to say, now, you know what, I'm healing, but this is wrong and people need to know about it. Mm-hmm. And there are so many stories that even if they don't involve a sexual trauma, there's some kind of unfairness or discrimination that all of these women have faced being in the military in this male-dominated environment. And so that was one of the reasons why we wanted to do this project. And so for me, just learning those things and that they're ongoing injustices has been really, really upsetting for me, but also made me really proud that these women are willing to step forward and tell these stories.
Do you want to say the actual date and location of the event for our listeners?
So Breaking Rank opens on February 17th, and we will run for 3 weeks. We'll be performing at Milagro Theater, and we run Wednesday evenings, Saturday afternoon, and Sunday evenings. Mm-hmm. And you can find more information at wellarts.org.
Is anybody here from Well Arts?
I'm representing Well Arts. I'm facilitating through them.
I think in the 90s, didn't that when Well Arts started? Do you know when Well Arts started? Because I remember...
Yeah, late 90s.
Yeah, because I remember they came to a bunch of us
guys, because there wasn't any women at that time in the group, and we wrote stuff and had it performed. Remember? Right.
Yes.
And that was back in, go ahead.
Yeah, I think in the early 2000s, they did a group with veterans and family members.
Right, that's what it was. That's what it was. And we wrote these stories, and they were performed. Yeah. And I'm trying to think of the woman's name.
Kate.
Kate, mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Kate. Yeah. Do you know where Kate is or anything about Kate?
Kate is somewhere in Arizona.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because I remember that. They came at one of our meetings and they said that's what they wanted to do and ask us if we'd be interested in doing it. And it was just amazing. I was visiting Vietnam, so I didn't get to do my story, but everybody else did. It was wonderful. It was great. So it started way back then. Yeah. So it's been around quite a while.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you a question that's interesting. When you were directing these women, these women actors, they're all veterans, all the women actresses except for you?
The writers are.
All the writers are. So none of the... You're acting, right?
No, I am just a writer. All of the actors
just a writer.
Just a writer.
The
writers are the linchpin to this.
So are you at all of the rehearsals and everything?
So far, I have been.
Uh-huh. So that's really good.
Early on in the process, we want to have the writers in the room so that they can get to know the actors and the actors can really get a better sense of the experience
that the writers have had, so
that we can accurately portray the stories on stage. So we're all very much, we just had our first week of rehearsal, so we're all very much in this learning stage right now, and we're still developing some of the scenes.
Right, so I'm positive that it gets really emotional. It's got to get real emotional with this stuff coming out of it, especially the sexual trauma. So you have to kind of control that.
You know, I think it's important to point out that women have been dealing with sexual trauma since time immemorial.
Yeah.
And, you know, this idea that we're these fragile things that are going to break if someone breathes, you know, in our direction. You know, it might be problematic. And, you know, women are absolutely have this, you know, indomitable strength.
Yeah, of course.
And it is very vulnerable and it's very difficult. And this is very difficult subject matter. But, you know, this is something that we've been dealing with for a long time. All of us are at different points in our healing processes. This is just another way, and I want to give a big shout out to everyone involved in this project and to talk about how art absolutely is a bridge to healing. And it is able to give us a voice and a way to process our trauma and these difficult emotions, a way that we're able to self-determine. No one else is telling us, you know, go through this process. Here are the steps you're going to take. This very personal, creative expression touches us in ways that maybe a lot of other traditional healing practices may not.
Yeah, true. That's true. That's true. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask Belle. This is Lynn Joy, and Belle and I have been close for 35 years, and I wanted to give her an opportunity to talk about her own experience as a writer in the early days of Well Arts.
Yeah, and first I want to say that what you just said is exactly why we wanted to do this work. Talk therapy does not work for everybody.
Right.
Climbing a mountain, writing a story, painting a picture can do just as much as being in therapy for a year, if not more, for some people. So we want to give people options for treatment and for healing.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
I know. And we actually have another writing group starting. It's not connected to Well Arts, but it's going to start soon, I think February 3rd. And you can go to the website, returningveterans.org, to find out about it. It's for women veterans, again. And it's led by Professor Kate Gray, who is a award-winning poet and a professor at Clackamas Community College.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, it'll be good. So my experience, I wanted to do this because I knew how healing it was. I had been, I had a bone marrow transplant for leukemia, and a year after that, my muscles started dying, and I was intubated and on life support for a month and a half, and came out of it, and the counselor at OHSU said, I know about this cancer writing group. I think it would be perfect for you. It's the Well Arts. It's a new organization. And I did it. And everybody has a story in or out of the military. And being given the opportunity to tell your story is why the Well Arts is so important to this community. So I encourage people to attend the performances. If you are a veteran, if you're not a veteran, if you have somebody in your family who's in the military or not, you need to know about this part of our country and our history, and these women are telling their history, and it's really, really powerful.
Yeah. What year?
Did I do it?
Who were you
there? I think it was Performing Wellness 2. It was their second show, and I think it was 2001.
Oh. Yeah. And when were you diagnosed?
I was 40, and that was in 1996, so I'm kind of giving myself away there.
Yeah, you sure did.
If you can add, you're good.
Yeah, really. You're listening to Veterans Voice on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, and we're talking about this wonderful play coming up, Breaking Rank, and some of the stuff that's behind it. And it's just, I think it's going to be a great play, and it just amazes me that this is going on, and I want to ask you again, as being the director, man, that's got to be a good job.
I mean, I've
do you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, how you?
Yeah, I've learned a lot, and I'm continuing to learn a lot. I was brought into the project just based on the fact that that the staff at Well Arts, Heath and Lyle, thought that I would be a good facilitator for the project, and I was really interested in working with this group of people. And the fact that these women trusted me as quickly as they did to tell me these stories, and then to take them and help them shape them for the stage is really an honor for me. It can be difficult because, yes, you are writing your own life story, right, but then you're presenting it on stage for an audience to watch in a way that is engaging and interesting to them. So the writers have had to develop a certain amount of objectivity about their story.
Right.
And so in the beginning, it may have been very emotional to tell, but it's gotten progressively easier.
Right.
And so that was one reason why it was good to have some mental health support in the room, and why it was good. Immediately, we had group agreements. Lena brought it up first day. She's like, you know, I think we should have some group agreements.
Tell me about that. What's that? That's good going.
That we're autonomous.
Way to go.
And that we're responsible for our own reactions and for our own needs in the room.
Yeah.
And Lena, do you want to add anything to that?
Sure. Well, as a social activist and being involved in a lot of, you know, fantastic groups in Portland and organizations that focus on using popular education as a model, that we are, you know, advocate for ourselves, and we support each other in advocating. And, you know, those group agreements just, you know, fit that model really well. I'm a CHW, community health worker, and that's really where I got started. Village Gardens, whoop, whoop. you know, North Portland, all of the wonderful people that I've worked with in Portland, and so many organizations that, you know, use that model, that we are capable, no matter who we are, of self-determining and of being autonomous. And so I did, you know, bring a little bit to the workshop, and I was so grateful to have this. The timing couldn't have been better. And all of us have gotten close. I look forward to, you know, getting even closer to the actors, and everything, you know, is just very synergistic. Everything's coming together.
This is Lynn Joy. I want to underscore what Lena just said and say out loud that there were no tears in the room. This was not a sad, weepy ladies' circle. These are strong, resilient women who were telling the truth of their stories. What there was in the room was outrage, determination, mm-hmm. passion, mm-hmm. Laughter. plenty of laughter. Yes. So this was not a like, oh, the poor ladies really need one another's support. This was like, we've been told not to swear, so I'll stop with that.
I have a question, I think, for anybody who feels like answering, and maybe for everybody. Why is it so important for people to hear these stories? Because this isn't the type of thing that we're going to find by turning on a popular news channel. This is military sexual trauma. This is some, we're talking about combat scenarios these women have been in, some serious stuff. Why is it important that the public know about this? What can they learn?
I think it's so important because as I said, I've learned so much through this, things that I didn't know were happening. And the fact that women who are in the military are being discriminated against and being victimized in a body that has been created to defend and protect. And within that, they're not being defended and protected. And they're not as able to advocate for themselves within the system as they should be. And so that's one of the reasons why it's so important for these stories to be out there.
I also think another reason is that women are a growing population in our military. I think it's predicted that in a few years, women will make up 20% of the U.S. military. And that's a huge number. Mm-hmm. And so I hope this is also not just a change agent for the writers, the actors, the people involved, but for the people who come to see the shows. You need to know what your country does, where they are, where we put military people without telling our citizens. And you need to know what happens to them when they come home. And nobody, like in a state like Oregon without a military base, people just come home. And we have a National Guard in Oregon that per capita has been deployed more times than any other state. So the service members and veterans in our communities have been deployed, some of them as many as 9 times to Iraq and Afghanistan, Kuwait, other zones, you know, where people can come home with issues that then, for me, it's about also how it affects families. And then families get secondary PTSD, and then it's passed down to their family. So my main goal is to stop this and to have people be more intentional about what they do, and then for veterans to know that it's okay to get help, that it's okay to join a writing group, to go rafting with other veterans, to go to the American Legion post on Northeast Alberta, where Sean Davis is the commander. He's an Iraq War vet. He's doing great things with veterans there. There's opportunities out there for veterans to heal that don't mean they have to go to the VA or to a counselor's office. That is amazing also. My colleagues at the VA, my practitioners do amazing work. Use all of those things, like Lena has done. Use a variety of different things to help you heal and move forward.
I would like to add that it's really important that our voices are heard. We have been silenced. We're an invisible population. When you think of a GI or military, mm-hmm. you think of men. And what women go through, male soldiers is, you know, we all are in this very precarious situation, to say the least. And it's important for the public, just to echo Belle about being in Oregon, where we don't have a big military presence mm-hmm. as far as a base here. And so there's not a lot of people who have that experience. It's not, you know, in our faces, it's not something we're dealing with a lot. To know that, like, there's a lot of women veterans here and, you know, across the nation. And I think it's important. People want to, especially in Portland, want to be informed, you know, are interested in real issues and, you know, do not want to be complicit in these crimes. And so this lets people know, gives a voice and a face to women veterans and what we have experienced. Whether you're a veteran or not, you know, if you're a person who feels any responsibility for other humans at all, you'd be, you might want to check it out.
You bet. Yeah. You bet.
And this is Angie. I'd like to point out that current veterans make up less than 1% of the U.S. population right now. Current and enlisted active duty people is less than 1% of the U.S. population. And so it's really easy for people to kind of just not think about the military or not think about veterans, because a lot of people don't know any veterans or don't know any active duty people today. And so I think that this really engages people in a way that they have to humanize the experience of a veteran, because a lot of the things that we see is, oh, people somewhere are doing something for somebody somewhere. And these are real experiences, and I think it's really, really important to play these out in the way that we're doing it. Does anybody want to add anything else as far as why the public should know about this? Lena?
Thank you. Yes, as we're going into an election year, I think it's really important to understand the impact of military service. And, you know, to cast your vote, to first of all, vote. It does matter. The Koch brothers wouldn't be spending so much money if it didn't matter. So do vote, number one. You know, and please make informed decisions. And this is one way that you can do that, to see, like, how does this really impact military personnel? Yeah.
Well, because we actually just sent another 1,800 troops to Iraq. And there are approximately 10,000 in Iraq and Afghanistan today. Even though we say that combat scenarios are over with, we still have military contractors overseas. We have many bases overseas. We have people who are in the military right now. We have more active duty troops going to Iraq and Afghanistan right now, and the numbers are rising. So I think it's really easy for people to kind of, for the public to forget that this is going on, and that's really, really important that people vote. I really agree with that, because disengaging is choosing active ignorance, which I think is, if there was such a thing as a sin, that would be it, I think. So
one of the things that's really interesting, women veterans, is one of the fastest growing group of women veterans, homeless women veterans, is African-Americans. African-American women veterans is really going high. Their homelessness is going high. And most of those women have children. They have children. Yeah. And that's a fast growing part of the veterans community is women.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I hardly ever hear talked about is also violence related to racism in the military. I have met a few people now that was their experience. Because of the color of their skin, they were targeted by people that they serve with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just sexual trauma. And perhaps Lena wants
yes,
to speak
absolutely.
To that.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that it's another myth in the military that they like to shove down your throat is, you know, it's equal playing field, we're all the same. And they refer to people of color as dark green. Absolutely. They're, you know, I want to say the military is a microcosm of our society. and, you know, kind of to the 10th or 100th power, you know, so we have this hyper masculinized society to start with. And then you take that and, you know, extremely, sorry to break it to you, but we're not living in a post-racial society. You know, this very racist, xenophobic society. Mm-hmm. And then you add a, you know, the violence. Fundamentally, the military is absolutely violent. We come from a society, a very violent society, rape culture. And so we have all of these elements, and then you just put that on steroids, mix it up real nice, and you can just imagine, you know, that it's just traumatic to be in that environment. Just existing is an act of resistance.
Yeah. So, because this is Veterans Voice Radio, I would like to ask you, Lena. Yeah. You were in the military from what year to what year, please say?
From 87 till 90.
Okay. I am always curious, because everybody's experience is different. I am curious, what was your transition out like?
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk about when you were actually transitioning out? Is there anything that comes to mind as far as how that was for you? Would you like to speak about that?
Sure. Well, another plug for the show, because I don't want to give too much away. so come see the show and you'll know about that. I don't want to spoil kind of some of the story, but for me, you know, when I got out, I was given the choice of getting an out because of my situation from Germany, and so I did end up taking that option, and I got out. And but I really liked my job. I was, like I said, I was a graphic designer and an illustrator, so. You know, I wanted to stay, but just not at my base, because I was not being supported and it wasn't safe. But I had a very rare job and my transfer didn't go through, I did get out of the Army. So I, in a way, I was relieved. But it was bittersweet. And you know, the military, some of the military personnel and in my chain of command were, you know, saying, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to? And I was like, well, that was strange to me. So that's something that stood out, because of course I
got asked if I was going to sell drugs.
When you got out of the Navy, they
yeah, that's what my officer asked me. What are you going to do, sell drugs?
Oh, my God.
It's often strange, right, how people are indoctrinated. You know, it's institutionalization. People are institutionalized, and they can't function outside of that very structured system. And so that's what I bumped up against, people, you know, being like, wow, what are you going to do? And I just thought, well, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to live just like I did for the last 19 years before I came into this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when we talking about military sexual trauma, one of the things that we talked about on the show before is the sexual trauma of men in the military. There's really a lot of sexual trauma.
It's very
of
rampant.
Men.
Yeah, it's, I think studies show about 1 out of 100 men experience that. Yeah, so the VA actually treats more men who have been experienced military sexual trauma. And going back to women, I have to say, for women veterans that I know, who will be upset with me if I don't, that there are many women veterans I know who did not experience MST, who really loved being in the military and actually want to go back in. I don't know if anybody tells that story, but I just have to say it's not for everybody. It's not an experience that was negative. For a lot of people it is, but
not
everybody.
A lot of men too. You know, a lot of men, it's the same, you know.
Yeah.
they, especially if they don't go to war.
Right.
If they don't go to war. Military,
and it seems to me it depends on who, what command is like.
Right. Mm.
Just like in elementary school, it depends on the principal. It depends on the people at the top, what they're like, right, and their integrity and all of that. Mm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
The ship that I was on was one of the last to integrate women. So it was tough. And maybe that's why I'm so angry. Maybe that's why my experience was a little more difficult, is because most of the men on the ship that I was on, they had never served with women on a ship before.
How many women were on your ship?
There was a total of 350 people on board and about 30 women.
One of our writers was one of the first women on board. There were two women, mm-hmm, in her group.
Can we repeat some information about this performance, where it's going to be, and
the
times and the places?
So Breaking Rank opens on February 17th. We're performing at Milagro Theater, and we run Wednesday evenings, Saturday afternoons, and Sunday evenings through March 5th.
I want to know more about the actresses. It's interesting. Are any of the actors veterans?
No.
Okay. I want to know more.
There's a cast of five women and one male.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Huh.
Playing multiple roles.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I did just want to touch back real quick and talk about the system in the military. And I just want to remind, you know, listeners and everyone that we are, you know, the military, remember, is fundamentally a violent system. And, you know, within violent, oppressive systems, there are always gatekeepers. There's always people suffering a kind of Stockholm syndrome. And so, even though some people may not have had MST, it is traumatic just to be a part of that system. And what we're trying to do, and what some people have touched on, about stopping the cycle of violence, because this perpetuates a cycle of abuse and violence that continues. I mean, the military, MST, all of these symptoms of this this core cause, and which is, you know, extremely violent, and it's damaging to anyone that's a part of it, whether they recognize it or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you think by having more women, like Bill said, what, 20%? It's going to be in the military. You think that's going to make a change? Anybody?
We can
anybody?
Only hope, right?
I'm not hopeful.
Yeah, I'm
for
I'm
at
not
all.
Because really, you know, when I went through basic training, and then I went through infantry school before I went to Vietnam, it's racist. The whole system's racist. They taught us to call people racist names, you know. And every day they said the army is nothing but a killing machine. And you're
Absolutely.
Just a little cog in this killing machine. And that's what they rammed every day. And so, you know, anybody think that you're going to go in the military and come back the same? You're not. If you go to war and you're going to come back, you're not going to be the same. And that's what I like about this play, you know. I think it's really going to open people's eyes about women in the military. And I think it's really important.
The open the eyes part, I wanted to ask Jessica maybe to speak to, in one of the very first gatherings of the women writers together, Jessica said, "Why are you doing this? What do you want?"
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to know from the writers so that I could help them put out the work that they wanted to put out. What is it that you want from this, and what do you want people to know? Mm-hmm. And I wish that I would have thought to bring the statement that we wrote as a group about what we wanted this play to do, because I wanted everyone to feel free to share the experiences that they needed to share without censoring themselves. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted them to be aware of not exploiting themselves and sharing things that, you know, spreading the idea that every woman has been victimized by sexual trauma. That's not true. The stories are of individuals. And so being able to look at veterans as not just one kind of mass group, but as these individuals who are part of a whole, who have had unique experiences mm-hmm. and who have individual voices was really important.
I'm really interested about that statement. That statement. Tell me about the statement.
Just as a group, we wanted to make sure that we were all moving toward the same goal with what we wanted this play to do and say. And so we knew we wanted to spread information. We wanted audiences to become aware of things that they were not necessarily aware of before. Okay. And then able to give them tools and resources to take action of some kind if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So our plan is to have information from Returning Veterans Project or mm-hmm. you know, other organizations that can help veterans, or to give civilians the tools to know, like, I can write to this senator, I can write to this congressperson, this is what I can do, this is how I can take an active role.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I know a lot of women veterans, because I deal with a lot, is that one of the things I think might happen to you, if a woman veteran has a disabled veteran license plate on their car, 9 times out of 10, somebody's going to say, oh, your husband was in the military, instead of saying, oh, you were in the military. It happens all the time. Our friend Arlene was a nurse in Vietnam, and that happens to Arlene all the time. And so the general public, they never get it. Mm-hmm. They really don't. They really don't get it. And mm-hmm. and that's a real problem when they don't understand it. So how did you pick this theater? It's a wonderful theater.
Well Arts has performed at Milagro several times. There's been a nice partnership between the two theaters. And so while Milagro is running one of their regular productions, we get to perform on their off days and their off hours. Uh-huh. And so it just worked out very nicely.
Yeah, it's a really good theater. They've had some really great plays.
They do really wonderful work.
They do great work there. So have you ever directed any other plays about veterans?
This is my first experience working with veterans and directing a play about veterans, yes.
If you want to do a good play about veterans, it's called Different Snow. It's called Different Snow. It's about Vietnam vets, and it's a two-act play. It's a two-act play, and it is really good. And it came out in 1982. It's called Different Snow, and it talks about the trauma of war. And that would really be a good one. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask Elena one last really fun question.
Okay.
We got 4 minutes.
And my last question is, what would you say to somebody considering joining the military right now, a young person? What if somebody walked up to you and said, I'm thinking about going... And then you say,
don't do it. Yeah, unequivocally, I would say absolutely not. Please inform yourself, you know, talk to me. I would definitely buy them a cup of coffee. I would tell them my, you know, this is my experience. This is why I, you know, would want you to consider other options. I have two daughters, and there's absolutely no way that they're going into the military. Would I do it again? No.
Yeah, I get that a lot, too. Would you do it again? I'm a Vietnam vet. Of course I'm not going to do it again.
Right. And, you know, I found out a lot about myself and, you know, learned a lot. But I could have learned those same things through having a life, just living and having a life experience. You know, it's not what I tell, this is the way I liken it too, is would I tell my daughters to get into a car full of guys? Mm. Absolutely not. Would you? No, I don't think you would. So I really, and I liken it to that. So no.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I want to thank Well Arts for putting this on, for Returning Veterans Project, which I've known for a long time, and the Wise Counsel and Comfort. I want to thank those for putting this on. And it's called Breaking Rank, and it's going to be at February 17th through the March 6th at Malago Theater. And if you want more information on it, you can give them a call at 503-459-4500. Or you can go on the internet at wellarts.org, and they'll give you more information about it. And I want to thank all of you for coming. It's very interesting, and I'm really glad you're doing it. It needs to be more done on women. We've talked a lot about women veterans on this show because it's very important to us. We'll be back on February 19th at 9 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM, and there it is.
The end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't marching anymore. For I killed my share of vengeance.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:59 a.m. Coming up at 10 is Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints. And at 11, the Radio Zine features a special town hall meeting that was held to deal with issues related to the Porter Ranch methane gas leak. Thanks, KBU members, for your generous support. If you are not currently a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can correct that oversight at kboo.fm. Just click where it says Donate Today. Stay tuned for more of What You're Thirsting For right after these important announcements.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid. With each passing year, the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. become more and more necessary to remember. With this in mind, the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Foundation members would like to invite you, your family, and friends to their 31st anniversary and tribute to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monday, January the 18th, broadcast live from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Highland Christian Center in Portland. As in years past, they will